How strong is the link between physical activity and success? We'll hear the answer from Adele Diamond, one of the world's leading researchers on the brain's cognitive functions. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Renowned neuroscientist Adele Diamond visited Iowa this week, and later this hour, she'll tell us about the real difference exercise can make in how you think, feel, and interact with others. Before that, if you could create a program in your community to help you and your neighbors live longer, healthier, happier lives, what would it look like? Well, four communities in Iowa are trying to do just that. It's called the Blue Zones Project, and we'll hear from them right after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. If you could create a program in your community to help you and your neighbors live longer, healthier, happier lives, what would it look like? How would you implement it? How would you encourage people to do it? Well, towns around Iowa are trying to transform their communities with habits for good health and well-being from the world's longest living people, and it's called the Blue Zones Project. The Blue Zones Project is based on Blue Zones principles developed by Dan Buettner of National Geographic. We've had him on this program several times in the last few years. It's the centerpiece, these principles, the centerpiece of the Healthiest State Initiative to make Iowa the healthiest state by 2016, as measured by the Gallup Healthways Wellbeing Index. And that would be the first ever daily assessment of U.S. residents' health and well-being. Blue Zones employs evidence-based ways to help people live longer, better lives by taking a systematic environmental approach to well-being, which focuses on optimizing policy, social networks, and building environments where people spend their time. Makes sense, right? Well, this week, the first Blue Zone demonstration sites rolled out their programs in the cities of Spencer, Cedar Falls, Mason City, and Waterloo. The initial four Blue Zone Project demonstration sites in Iowa. Let me mention at this point, later in the hour, something completely related to what we'll talk about in the first half hour. We'll hear from Adele Diamond, one of the world's leading researchers on the brain's cognitive functions. She'll tell us about the real difference that exercise can make in how you think, you feel, and how you interact with the others in your life. But first, let's check in with those several Blue Zone sites rolling out their programs. Why not go the way the sun does? Let's rise in the east. Let's start in the east and work our way toward the west. Crystal Buzza is with us, Director of Strategic Partnerships for the Waterloo School District, also School Policy Committee Co-Chair for the Blue Zones Project. Crystal, hi. Welcome to our program.
Hi, Ben. Thank you for having me.
Well, you know that public school participation is essential for a community, Waterloo and Cedar Falls, becoming Blue Zones communities. I understand at least 25% of a city's schools must achieve Blue Zones designation as part of the process. How many schools does that mean for you in Waterloo?
That's correct, Ben. For the Waterloo Community School District, the 25% percentage means that we have to have four of our schools become Blue Zone designated schools. Mm-hmm. And so right now, we actually have four elementaries that have already stepped up and are very eagerly working towards that exact designation.
Okay, and how long do you have to do that?
It's about an 18-month process, and so the way the Waterloo Blueprint is mapped out is that we hope to have two schools designated by May of 2013, and then we hope to have the other two designated by February of 2014. And obviously we'd love to have more than just four, but
sure,
those are the four we have to have to make our city become a Blue Zone city.
So let's say I get to go back in a time machine and be in one of your elementary schools that has a Blue Zone starting up there. What am I going to notice that's different?
Absolutely. Well, the whole concept with Blue Zones is to make small nudges to help people make the healthy choice, to make the healthy choice the easy choice. But some of the things that parents we'll notice is that, one, we're going to want our parent participation because they need to have input as we make some policy changes. Because the idea is once Blue Zones wraps up, these are things we want to keep and make them sustainable. So we're going to look for ways to create activity during the school day. Our students sit during math blocks and reading blocks, and small children get antsy. So how can we allow them to still sit but have some movement breaks in between to keep their brains running at optimal level? Some other things might be looking the way our lunchrooms are set up. Let's make sure we have a lot of healthy fruits and vegetable options so students can choose what types of fresh fruit and vegetables they like and let them load up on those and fuel their bodies with really healthy food, you know, before going on to some other things that maybe aren't as healthy, but, you know, they're also things that kids like to enjoy. We're not saying you can't have a cookie, you can't have a piece of cake, but let's just make sure you fill up on those really good things that will keep your bodies running smoothly.
And the kids, and the kids in the elementary school, and that's also why the parents are involved, they're understanding, they're understanding why this change is taking place. It's for their own good, right?
Absolutely. And I think kids now, more than ever, at least from when I was younger, seeing that health is so important. It's making this a family activity, sitting down as a family and being active and eating together. So we hope that the children will take the message that they learn at the school, pass it along at home, so that way it's everybody within their community, their circle, can see the benefits.
Mm-hmm. What's happening, for instance, to get people moving, get kids moving? Is recess any different? You know, when I was growing up in Cedar Falls, recess was as simple as this, Crystal. There was a ball, and the boys chased this ball, and whoever grabbed the ball was the person. Well, the game was called Kill 'Em, so you get the idea. And the person was made to give up the ball or else. So what else is happening on recess that fits in with the Blue Zones in Waterloo?
Absolutely, absolutely. So moving naturally is one of the principles with the Blue Zones. And we have two of our schools. Kittrell Elementary actually started a walking program in the morning where they invite parents and children to arrive at 8:25 and walk a few laps around that school building campus. They have a great campus that if you walk around about three times, you get about a mile in. At Orange Elementary, they have a walking program that they started during their recess time. And this is actually something they've been doing for well over a year now. And so they reward students for making laps around the playground, and they'll get things like little running shoe bracelet charms to put around their wrist. So it shows how many laps they make, and it's called a mileage club. And so they keep track of all their miles, and they just incent them for making good, healthy choices. And it doesn't mean our kids still can't run around and chase each other, but it's just making sure that every child is active during recess to get that energy out. Just kind of helps during the classroom time, too. So it's a definite win-win.
Crystal Buzza, thank you very much. We have to go. We have many others to check in with. We'll hopefully check in with you again. It sounds like a wonderful program and a wonderful start, Crystal. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben.
And as we check in the initial Blue Zone sites across the state, we want to take a couple calls. In neighboring Cedar Falls, Jim Young is joining us. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Ben. Nice to speak with you today. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sure. We want to move on to some of the other sites, but Waterloo Cedar Falls on our radar, on our map. What's going on there with you?
Well, in Cedar Falls, I've been a part of the Powered 9, which is the group that has done the planning for Cedar Falls. And we are excited. And number one, we really are well on our way to achieving designation for our businesses, for our schools. In fact, we have some four or five businesses that have already received designation, one school that has two grocery stores. So we're really doing well. We are looking at this as potentially transformational for not just for Cedar Falls, but for the entire state of Iowa.
And you're a doctor, so you're particularly happy that your patients will be in better shape.
Well, you know, we all know that chronic disease is a huge drag on our economy in terms of our healthcare dollars, and we really have to do something about turning the corner. We have got to make some changes if we are going to have any hope of bending the cost care curve in terms of healthcare. We have got to make changes, and this, in my way of looking at it, is potentially transformational for this community as well as other communities around the state.
Okay, good. Jim Young, thank you very much for joining us from Cedar Falls. Good luck.
Thank you.
Let's go move a little bit to the west, to Mason City, one of the other Blue Zone demonstration sites being launched this week. Robin Anderson is executive director at the Mason City Area Chamber of Commerce, co-chair for Mason City's Power 9 Committee, joining us by phone. Hi, Robin.
Hi there.
Now we heard a little bit about the Power 9. Tell us again what that is.
Well, that is the group that spearheaded making the blueprint for each community. That was really our charge, was to use focus group data, research-based data, and come up with initiatives in our community for how we would like to achieve this transformation to better well-being.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I understand you're trying to get this in various work sites around the community. Tell me specifically what's going on in Mason City.
Well, I'm working specifically in the work site area. And as we looked at our scores in the Gallup HealthWise Wellbeing Index, we were a little disturbed that Mason City, for all the positive things going on here, our score was, 8.7 variance to Iowa, and we were the lowest among the first initial sites. So we knew we needed to do something in our work sites. So we've got 20 community-identified employers that we need to certify at least 50% of them to get our designation, but then we're also working with loads of other employers to do the same thing.
And the first step with those employers, you've selected all 20 of them. Are you reaching out? Have you reached out?
We are, and we actually already have one certified and a couple that are nearly certified. And what our goal is to really create worksite environments that are more supportive of well-being, and that really starts with leadership in those companies. And we know that people are more satisfied at work if they know their purpose. So it's something as simple as, does everybody know, what, if they're a cog in the wheel, what they're doing to help impact the end product?
Mm-hmm.
But we're also doing things like taking a look at break rooms, taking a look at snacks that are available at work, having walking meetings or standing meetings instead of sitting meetings.
Right. If it's a beautiful day like today, say, well, why don't the three of us go walk a couple blocks while we talk about this, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And for some of our, other meetings, I know for the Chamber Board, we meet at 7 a.m. instead of having, donuts, we've started having, fruit and yogurt, or earlier this week we had steel-cut oatmeal with apples, and it just makes it easier for people to choose to make a healthy choice.
Robin, we have to move on in a minute. One last question, if you could tell me, what barriers have you encountered or do you anticipate encountering in this process?
Well, change is hard. And we are really looking at this from we want to fundamentally change the way we're living. And so rather than rushing through this process and just trying to get people to check boxes, we really want to affect long-term change. And that's difficult.
Yes, it is. We all know that, those of us who've ever tried New Year's resolutions.
Exactly.
So you want a whole community in for the long term. We wish you well, Robin Anderson in Mason City. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gary Pyle called us, is on the line from Mason City as well. Hi, Gary. How are you involved with the Blue Zones?
Well, I'm on the Power 9 committee with Robin as well, and I'm actually part of a work site. I'm one of the directors here at the Mason City's Office of Principal Financial Group.
Oh, and how's it going there? What stage are you at?
Well, we are very close to getting our designation. We've gone through our checklist, and of course, we focused on wellness for a long time, as our company has. So we're just need to finish up some details, and then we should meet our designation status.
How difficult has the transition been? Has there been any pushback, grumbles about, well, I really like those real sweet treats that we would get here?
No, really, the whole focus of Blue Zone is not necessarily about forcing a change on people. It's about making that right decision, the decision to buy the healthy snack, whatever. It's about making that choice easier for them. So as you look at the vending machines, you still have the candy bar in there, you still have the cookie and all that, but you also, at the very eye level, you put in all the healthy snacks, the apples, the carrots, those kinds of things. So as people are looking and making their selections, it's, oh, well, that's the first thing, and yeah, you're right, I probably could eat healthier. Let me choose that item instead of the other component.
Okay, Gary Pyle, thank you. From Mason City, thanks for talking with us.
You bet. Thanks for taking the call.
And we move westward. If you've just joined us, we're touring quickly this half hour, the first four Blue Zone demonstration sites rolling out their programs in the state, Waterloo, Cedar Falls, Mason City, and now we're on to Spencer. Joining us from Spencer, Candace Daniels, Spencer Hospital HR Generalist, a co-chair of the Worksite Committee for Blue Zones. Candace, hi.
Hi.
Let's see. Tell us how you're involved here. I'm looking at my notes, and I see that, congratulations, Spencer Hospital achieved certification status as a Blue Zone Worksite August 3rd. Is it true? One of the state's first Blue Zone certified worksites.
We were, and we're very proud to be one of the first, yes.
Okay, so tell us what you're doing now at this point to spread that around the community there in Spencer.
You bet. Well, I am a co-chair on the Worksite Designation Committee, and so the leadership team, the Power Nine creates the blueprint, and then the leadership team are kind of the boots on the street, so to speak. And so our mission right now is to help all the other work sites in Spencer get designated as well. We're doing well. We have six certified sites, work sites right now. And so we're just kind of keeping that momentum going and helping other work sites reach their goal.
How are you picking work sites?
You know, they're coming to us as well as we came to them. So it's kind of a combination of both. Spencer is a relatively small community, so it's safe to say that most of us know each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've had a really good dynamic where people have really been supportive of the process. We meet as a committee. We mentor each other. And so for those of us that are now designated, we are now starting to actively seek out the others that are, you know, in the process and close to certification or designation, or some of those that are just starting out.
I imagine in the certification process, you're going to these companies, these work sites, and have a checklist of sorts. Can you give us some examples of what's on that checklist?
Absolutely. So the checklist is great because it's an a la carte menu where you can pick and choose what works for your work site. And so an example would be having workstations that allow people to stand or have the flexibility of standing. One of the things that we've trialed here at the hospital as a result of the Blue Zones is just that. And so our plant department built a few desks, of existing desks, on stilts, so to speak. And so they're able to stand during the workday. And that was one that was something that we thought, well, we'll try that out and see how it works in this department and then go from there.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on it, how it's affecting or will affect productivity?
You know, it's relatively new, so that's yet to be told. But, you know, there's research out there that shows that folks that get up and move throughout the day are, you know, more productive and are able to focus on their work. And so we're excited to see that.
Okay. Any surprises that have come up in the process?
Oh, you know, to be honest, I thought there'd be more resistance to some of the changes. For example, we had large glasses in our cafeteria, and we removed them. That was one of the items on the checklist, to just have plates that are 10 inches in diameter or smaller, which we had, but then also large glasses, just have tall, narrow ones. We didn't get a lot of slack on that. And so some of these small changes, folks don't even know necessarily are obvious ones, and that's what one of the other speakers was talking about, was it's just these little nudges where we're not taking away things, but we're just, you know, making that choice easier for people.
Candace Daniels in Spencer at the Spencer Hospital, thank you very much for sharing with us your initial progress as you launch your Blue Zone.
Thank you.
Okay, and finally this half hour, Denny Klatt is with us. He's also in Spencer. Denny, are you on the line?
Yes.
Hi. You are a firefighter there in Spencer, and you're involved in the Blue Zone's Makeover Challenge in Spencer. What is the Makeover Challenge?
Well, yes, that's correct. We had our first meeting yesterday. Dan Buettner was here, and went over the whole program with us and where it started and the cities he visited and kind of gave us an idea where he's coming from and why this works. And, you know, it's just not something that somebody performed. People are actually doing this in their everyday lives.
Right. And Dan, wow, Mr. Blue Zones himself, Dan Buettner, with you. I imagine that it was inspiring for your group.
Yes, it was. That's the first time I met Dan. You know, of course, read a lot of things about him. But, yeah, he's really a dynamic guy and just one of those guys you'd like to, hey, let's go have lunch together or something, right. You know, that kind of guy. So.
Right, and we've had him on this program a couple of times. So he went around the world to find out where are the people, the happiest people, the most long-lived people, and then taking these habits of well-being and diet, exercise back so that we can learn them. Here in Iowa. Denny, I understand you were skeptical about this at first.
Yes, I was. You know, when the program started, you know, I was like, you know, what is this again now? Something else we want
right.
to run through, you know. But, you know, I watched, you know, because, hey, for a while I'd been thinking about, you know, I got to get myself in a better line here. You know, with the job I do, you know, you got to be on the top of your game at all times. And you can go from 0 to 100 in a blink of an eye, so.
And I understand you faced some health problems lately.
Yeah, you know, about 6-7 years ago, Rex, it's been longer than that. Yeah, about 6-7 years ago, I had got diagnosed with cancer. And, boy, that was an eye-opener. That even the doctor himself was like, oh, you're too young. It was prostate cancer. And he's like, guys, your age just don't get prostate cancer. And,
right.
And he, by chance, you know, I say it was, thank the Lord above, but it performed one more test on me, and it showed up, and I was like, wow.
Thank goodness. Caught it early.
Yeah, so I went through that. And
that was a wake-up call, too.
Yeah, been free ever since. You know, you have a go back twice here and checked, and clear. Thank the Lord above. But it gave me a lot of eye-opening things that I got to be thankful for what I have, and I've got 5 daughters, and from their ages from 7 to 28, so keeps me pretty busy with daughters. And that was something Dan told me yesterday, that men with 5 daughters or more have a longer life. I was like, really?
You know? Really? That's scientifically proven. Well, that was a comfort to you. What makes you think, as a former skeptic of the Blue Zones, that this is more than a flash in the pan, more than a passing fad, that you can really implement this in Spencer and change lives, your generation, your daughter's generation?
Right. Well, you know, some of the things, just the first power of 9, the naturally moving, I got to thinking about my dad and my grandpa. You know, they were farmers and my dad's still alive, my grandpa since passed, but, you know, he farmed up till he was 80 years old and good health all of his life. And after he actually retired and slowed down and started sitting around the house is when he started to get sick. And even my dad now stays very active. He's always moving, doing something, really good health. And this year, my daughters and I, we planted a garden for the first time together. Man, that was such, you know, not only the moving, the bending, the pulling the weeds, the kids just had an outstanding time to do this together. So it was also something that brought us together, you know, do something else together.
Right, and that observation you made is so interesting. It makes it very clear that if you talk to older Iowans, and Iowa has many, many older Iowans, even many, I think, more centenarians than most other states in the country, that talk to anyone over 90, over 100, they are active.
Yeah,
or they have
are.
Had an active life. An active life will be something that puts you in the best stead for moving forward. I want to thank you very much, Denny Klatt, firefighter, and Spencer, for sharing. Good luck with your community's Blue Zones project.
Awesome. Thanks, Dan.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll hear from Adele Diamond, one of the world's leading researchers on the brain's cognitive functions. Now, she's going to back this up, give you even more motivation for getting out in this beautiful weather, for instance, today. She'll tell us about the real difference exercise can make in how you think, feel, and interact with others. Adele Diamond, one of the world's leading researchers on the brain's cognitive functions, when we return. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. So nice to have you with us on this edition of River to River over the noon hour here on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer, and my next guest is Adele Diamond, one of the founders of a field called developmental cognitive neuroscience. Diamond holds the Canada Research Chair Tier 1 Professorship in Developmental Cognitive Neuroscience at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. She's also a fellow at the Royal Society of Canada. And earlier this week, she visited Iowa State University to talk about the real difference exercise can make in how you think, feel, and interact with others. Also, the real difference exercise can make in a successful career. I began by asking Adele Diamond to explain her particular field in neuroscience.
Well, my specialty within that field is something called executive functions and the prefrontal cortex of the brain that they depend on. Executive functions are the most complex human mental abilities, like problem solving, reasoning, holding information in mind and mentally working with it, being able to be cognitively flexible and see things from different perspectives, being able to exercise self-control and thinking before you act, things like that, resisting temptations.
Mm-hmm. So this is the part of that really makes us human that we ascend to, not our most primitive nature, though.
No, it's the last area of the brain to evolve during evolution and the latest to fully mature during human development.
Adele Diamond, you have researched the connection between physical exercise and success. Let's talk about that a little bit. And I know this operates on many different levels. I'd love to have you talk about each of those levels, the social, emotional, and cognitive aspects of this. But what is exactly happening in the brain when we exercise?
Well, for one thing, you're increasing the blood flow to the brain. And executive functions are particularly energy taxing, and you have to use effort to use them. And so when you have more blood flow, you have more oxygen going to the brain. So the brain has more ability to do these effortful things like resisting temptations, not doing your first inclination. It also increases BDNF, which has to do with the growth of synapses and growth of processes in the brain. So it helps things grow in the brain, and it helps the brain have more energy to function.
Is this fairly new that the brain that we understand how the brain continues to grow? Would it be fair to say an old model is that as a child we grow up, our brain gets big, and then we pretty much got it?
Yes, that's the old model. And we now know that neuroplasticity, the ability of the brain to change, is true throughout life. And we also know that physical activity is even beneficial for cognitive functions in old people. There's no period during your life when the brain can't change. And we don't know about infants so much in physical activity. But after that, there's no point in the life cycle where there's no benefit for how well you think of physical activity.
Mm-hmm. Solve for me this puzzle then that goes into a slightly different direction. We've all had the experience, counterintuitive it seems, that the more we exercise, or if we exercise enough, we can actually reduce the fatigue that we feel during the day and increase our energy.
Mm-hmm.
Why would that be?
Well, you have much more energy in general for doing physical things and doing cognitive things. There isn't any great divide between motor and cognitive. Your body is working better, and it's more fit to do anything you want to do.
Mm-hmm. So this divide between mind and body that we tend to have in the Western world is really not the divide we think it is?
No, absolutely not, on many levels. There's no divide in the brain. There's not like certain brain regions that only do motor and certain brain regions that only do cognitive. Almost every brain region is involved in both. When we were first able to do MRIs, people were astonished to see a classical motor region, the cerebellum, which everybody knew was motor, to light up when you have to do the cognitive tasks that activate prefrontal cortex. And you're controlling for motor. There's no motor aspect of the task. And this area that's only supposed to be involved in motor is involved in these tasks. And when prefrontal activation went up, cerebellar activation went up. When cerebellar activation went down, prefrontal activation went down. Nobody to this day fully understands it. But at least now we know that the cerebellum isn't only motor. It's fundamentally also involved in the most complex cognitive tasks. And we also know that all the different parts of a person, the cognitive, the social, the emotional, the physical, they're all interrelated. And if you ignore one, those unmet needs will pull you down for whatever you were trying to improve.
Talk a little bit. You've talked about the cognitive aspects, but you mentioned social and emotional as well.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about exercise's benefits for the emotional well-being of a person.
As you do a physical activity, it often generates endorphins. It often gives you a lot of joy, even if you're doing something more mindless, like just running. But also, often in physical activity, you have goals that you set for yourself. And at the beginning, they may seem impossible, and then you reach them. And you have this wonderful feeling of pride and accomplishment. I can do it. And if I can do it in this, maybe I can do it in other things. And often in sports or other activities, you have the repeated experience of something looks impossible. Then with effort, you're able to do it. Then you try the next thing, and this looks like there's no way you're going to be able to do it. Then with effort, you're able to do it. So you learn that with effort, almost nothing is impossible. I can succeed. I can do things. There's the wonderful feeling of pride and self-confidence and joy. And then there are all these other aspects that are social. So often you're doing things with other people. And you're working together. You're striving toward a common goal. It doesn't matter what our differences might be. We're all on the same team. We're all working for the same thing. Yes.
Was there a time in your life when you were, a desk jockey, as they say, and didn't pay attention to properly exercising? And a moment, a time when you discovered this is really a key.
Yes. So I'm in graduate school at Harvard in Boston, not getting much exercise in the middle of the winter, and fantasizing about how nice it would be to, when I get married and have kids, to work on a ranch or a farm over the summer, because what a wonderful experience it would be for the children. And then it dawned on me, duh, I didn't have to wait until I had kids. Mm-hmm. I could actually do this now. And so I spent that summer working as a hired hand on a cattle ranch in Central Oregon. And the difference in my fitness and the difference in my sense of joy in being alive was marked.
What about memory? How can physical movement improve memory?
It improves prefrontal functioning. So it improves a certain kind of memory called working memory, which is the ability to hold information in mind and work with it, like reordering a to-do list or doing mental math or holding in mind what I'm saying and relating it to what I said earlier. But to recall or recognition, I don't know. Exercise is supposed to improve the hippocampus, and the hippocampus is important for those kinds of memories, the medial temporal lobe. So I would assume that exercise improves memory, but that's outside my area of expertise, I'm afraid.
Mm. I'm wondering, let me say I've got a big chart here. I've got a circle, and these are all knowable things about our mind, our brain. How much are you going to color in that we know now? What percent?
25%.
25%. How much of that 25% has been gained in the last 10 or 20 years, in your lifetime?
19%.
Really? It's been that much of a leap we've made in recent years?
I think so,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about the older thinking, so take us through that. A generation or two ago, our idea about the thinking, the brain, how it worked, the mind was what?
Well, first of all, things were fixed very early. A lot of things were set in the genes, so we now know that experience shapes the gene expression, shapes the mind, shapes the brain. We know about neuroplasticity in a way we never knew before, so we know that the brain can change. We know that the brain is very interrelated. People used to talk about one area of the brain doing this and another area of the brain doing that, but no area of the brain does anything in isolation. It's always part of an integrated circuit. So we now think of the brain in terms of circuits instead of individual areas. We used to think about functions like cognitive or motor very separately, or emotions, and we now know that those are very interrelated. And more recently, the prefrontal cortex has become exalted because it's considered responsible for the highest cognitive functions. But actually, prefrontal cortex is way overrated. When you're first learning something, when you're a novice, you need prefrontal. But when you're really good at something, you're not using prefrontal so much. Because prefrontal is the newest kid on the block. It takes more laborious energy to figure something out. And it doesn't do things as well as the older areas of the brain, like the subcortex, that have had much more time over thousands of years of evolution to perfect what they're doing. So, for example, let's say you have a little kid who knows he shouldn't hit another kid. But if that knowledge hasn't been passed on from prefrontal to subcortex, in the heat of the moment, that child's going to hit another, even though if you asked him, he knows perfectly well he shouldn't do that. It's the difference between having it known at the intellectual level, at the level of prefrontal, and having it be automatic, being a part of you. And the only way it becomes a part of you is through practice, repeated, repeated, repeated practice. And then it moves off from having to think about it to having it be automatic when you do it so much better.
If you just joined us, my guest this half hour is Adele Diamond, who's visiting Iowa, one of the founders of the field of developmental cognitive neuroscience. She holds a Canadian research chair, Tier 1 professorship in developmental cognitive neuroscience at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, and she's also a fellow of the Royal Society of Canada. I understand, Adele, that you also study this executive function, this frontal lobe function development in children. So I wonder, how concerned are you about what many of us parents are concerned about, the lack of outdoor playtime activity in the young? In our digital age, we're on tablets, computers, phones, smartphones, all that kinds of things. What effect is that having? What do you fear?
Well, I do fear, and we don't know for sure. But one thing we know is that kids' executive functions, when they start school and in the early years of school, seem to be worse now than they were a generation or two ago.
How do we know that?
Well, for example, there was a study in Russia that used the same task with children 30 years ago and children about more recently. And they found that they studied 3-, 5-, and 7-year-olds. And what they found 30 years ago, the performance of the 5-year-olds then was like 3-year-olds now. And the performance of 5-year-olds then was like 7-year-olds now. So it seemed that the kids were 2 years behind, even though they were the same age. And teachers are finding that they have discipline problems much more in school and have attention the kids have attention problems much more than they used to. Little kids are getting expelled from schools at astronomical rates now, and you didn't used to see that.
And you can tie this or surmise this has something to do with our digital age?
Well, that's one hypothesis. I have no data. I have no proof. Mm-hmm. But one hypothesis is that years ago, after school, all the kids in the neighborhood used to play together. We had to figure out some way to do it. Nobody scheduled a play date. Nobody told us that we're playing soccer now or whatever. Nobody told us the rules of the game. We all had to come to an agreement on this, monitor one another, get along with each other, come up with new creative ways to spend our time, and we were outside in nature. Now kids are much more alone in front of technology. And even something like Sesame Street assumes a short attention span. So about every 15 seconds, it's changing things to try to grab your attention. Whereas years ago, I used to listen to storytellers. I could sit there for half an hour, no problem, totally engaged in the story I'm hearing. Kids today have very little experience with that. Most things are very short, and you keep going from one thing to the next.
Is that why we're seeing perhaps a diagnosis spike in ADD, attention deficit disorder, ADHD as well?
That's one hypothesis. That's a very likely hypothesis. Another hypothesis is that today, little kids, 3, 4, 5, 6 years of age, are expected to be like little college students in school and to sit still for extended periods listening to a teacher give a lesson. So often they'll be assumed to have attention deficit disorder, hyperactivity, or impulsivity when they're just normal little boys. But what's being asked of them is totally opposite to what they're able to do. So I think part of it is that children's executive functions are maturing more slowly and are worse today than they used to be. And part of it is that we're demanding much more of their executive functions in early school grades than we ever used to.
Mm. I wonder what would be a remedy for that. We obviously can't go back to the 80s, the 70s, 60s, before when you describe these times when you went out and just created your own fun. We can't go back there. What do you recommend for parents then?
Well, for one thing, in schools, I would suggest experiential learning and hands-on learning, not sitting still and listening to somebody. Think about it. We've known for 20 years that you learn more by doing than by observing or listening. If I asked you who's going to learn more, the driver or the passenger in the car, all of your listeners know, and they know why. The driver is going to learn the route better because he has to pay attention, and the passenger who's passively sitting there is not going to learn the route more. And somehow we forget that when we put kids in school and we have them passively sit there.
Mm.
We need to have them be active, doing things, learning things. And then they're using their bodies. They're using their intellects. They're out there in the world doing things, whether it's in the playground or it's in the classroom or it's in the community. In terms of what parents can do is find something other than the computer or technology that your child might be passionate about. It might be martial arts. It could be playing the guitar or playing some other instrument. It could be almost anything. But there's probably something that your child would enjoy that involves doing, and often doing with other people.
Well, a reaction that I think listening to this conversation my 12-year-old might have would be, okay, aside from the physical side, I'm not doing anything when I'm in a virtual world. On a different planet, fighting aliens or something like that. But I am cooperating. I'm playing with my friends. I run home from school. I get online. All my friends are online. And I'm operating in a world, and I'm cooperating, and I'm playing. But it's in a new way.
Well, I think there's some truth to that, especially if you're not doing shoot 'em up games, but you're doing things that require some planning or problem-solving or reasoning or forethought. But I think it's different to interact like we are over the phone or by Skype or by Internet where you're not even seeing each other and in person. For example, I was talking to somebody who'd done her research in the neonative intensive care. And there was one horribly sick baby in there who kept coding, who kept not being able to breathe. The baby is in an incubator totally enclosed in the machine. And what this student observed is that whenever her mother or grandmother came and sat outside the incubator, the child never coded, never had trouble breathing.
Hmm.
I think there's something about the presence of another person, and there's certainly something about touch or the look in somebody's eye. There's so much that we get that's nonverbal that has to do with being in the presence of somebody else.
Recently, we've been hearing about treadmill desks, wobble boards, ways you can work in a cubicle and exercise or integrate exercise into work. Do they actually help?
I don't know of data on that, but the research on aerobics would suggest that it probably does, although no aerobics studies have been done in a dual task situation like you're describing, because you're describing running at the same time that you're thinking. It may actually interfere with each other. You may need to do them separately, but we don't know. It's certainly a testable hypothesis and worth testing. What we find with children is what has more of a benefit from children than just running or just aerobics is some form of exercise that also involves character development, like traditional martial arts, or that involves mindfulness, like yoga. The benefits from that, at least from the studies that have been done so far, have been wider than the benefits to children of just doing aerobics.
Adele Diamond, what about more traditional activities? If we talk about music or dance, is there something we can learn the wisdom of the ages that tells us, that links up with your research?
I think so. I think that it's no accident that traditional activities like music, dance, being physically active, has been found in every culture as far back as we can go over the globe. I don't think it's an accident. I think they serve important human needs and needs for children's development. They address the cognitive. You have to concentrate. You have to pay attention. You have to remember complex sequences. They give you wonderful joy. Often you're doing it as part of a group. You learn to work with each other, trust each other, and it uses the body. And I think that the more schools can embrace these activities rather than cut them out of the curriculum, the better the academic outcomes will be for the kids.
Adele Diamond, a fascinating area of research that you're involved with. Thank you so much for joining us this half hour. We appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you for your interest. Thank you very much.
Some science to motivate you to keep moving, an incentive to keep moving, especially in the holidays when we tend to take in a lot of calories. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Sarah Bowden. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.